Good day, Crime Talk aficionados. My name is Scott Reich, and this is Crime Talk. It's Tuesday, March 8th, 2022. Let's get to the docket. First, juror number 50 was questioned by the court regarding his alleged false answers on the jury questionnaire for Ghislaine Maxwell. The tentacles for Alex Murdoch run very deep. Just when you thought you've heard it all, somebody does this. A new twist on being a good teacher, apparently. Biting may be in order. And just when you thought it was safe to go out, wait until you hear about this story. And let me give you an example of what not to do when you're getting ready to start a new job as a police officer. Another politician's in trouble. And then finally, our dumb criminal of the day. Let's talk about it. Good day, aficionados. This is Crime Talk. My name is Scott Reich. We have a busy docket, but we got to do the formalities. First, if you haven't done so, please subscribe. Hit that little bell over there in the corner so that you receive notifications of when we go live every Tuesday night or put up new content. Today is Tuesday, March 8th, and that means we're going to be live tonight. Please join us. We have a lot to talk about. Obviously, there is never a dull moment when it comes to anything regarding crime in the world today. Also, the sponsor of today's show is Crime Talk Prep. Now, like I said the other day, if you had told me 2.5, 3 years ago that the world would shut down because of a virus, I would have laughed at you. If somebody told me 2 weeks ago that we were gradually getting close to nuclear war, I would have laughed in your face. And yet, here we are. And I saw an article today, of all places, Time Magazine, basically saying that the war in Ukraine is already having an effect on world food supply. And it's not going to be long until there's actually shortages on the shelves. And all it takes is somebody doing a little cyber attack and, well, guess what? Supply chains are interrupted. This just-in-time society means you can't always rush out and get exactly what you want if the supply chain is bogged down. So you need to be prepared for an emergency. And who knows when the next emergency will come. It seems like they keep coming every day. Go to crimetalkprep.com and you can sign up for your emergency food supply. You can buy as much as you want, but they have a special right now. If you get 3 months, you get $50 off that particular order. Now, you don't have to buy 3 months worth of food, but you need to be prepared with something. You know, even if you got a couple of cans of soup in the pantry, how long do you think that's going to last if something terrible happens? Not long. Anyway, crimetalkprep.com. Support our sponsors and do the right thing. Do the smart thing. All right. Well, let's talk about Ghislaine Maxwell, the juror who helped convict Ghislaine Maxwell of sex trafficking charges, acknowledged Tuesday under oath before a United States District Court judge that he filled out the wrong answer on a sworn questionnaire when he denied having been a victim of sexual abuse. Juror 50 stated, quote, "I would have put I was abused as a child." Juror 50 is a guy by the name of Scotty David, and he said that in court today. Now, it was a family member who is no longer a part of the family and one of his friends when he was apparently 9 or 10 years old, according to Mr. David. Now, David insisted that he answered on his juror questionnaire was an inadvertent mistake. And he says, quote, "This is one of the biggest mistakes I've made in my life." He added, testifying that he flew through the questionnaire and was super distracted in a noisy jury room. Now, as you may recall, after Maxwell was convicted of sex trafficking of minors for that man named Jeff, Scotty David was known as juror number 50, made several interviews to Reuters, the Daily Mail, and the Independent newspaper. And he stated, quote, "The verdict is for all the victims, for those who testified, for those who came forward, and for those who haven't come forward. I'm glad that Maxwell has been held accountable." Well, juror questionnaires, they're done under the penalty of perjury. And Mr. David appeared in court with his defense attorney, Todd Spodek, whom he'd retained after his press interview spilled into court. Now, U.S. District Court Judge Allison Nathan, who presided over Maxwell's trial, ordered today's inquiry at the request of prosecutors. She asked whether his answer to the question was accurate. David replied, No, it is not. Nathan then asked what the accurate answer to the questionnaire would be. David said that his stepbrother was the perpetrator for the alleged abuse that occurred on multiple occasions. Nathan asked if he told anyone, and David replied, I did not, for several years until I was in high school. David eventually told his mother, who called the police. David said he didn't know if any paperwork was filed and no charges were ever brought. He stated, quote, I don't really think about my sexual abuse, period. David testified, I don't tell many people. Well, last week, Spodek notified the court that his client, Mr. David, would invoke his Fifth Amendment rights against self-incrimination. That's right, when you knowingly perjure yourself on a juror questionnaire with the pains and penalties of perjury, and that wasn't accurate, yes, you need to invoke your rights against self-incrimination so you are not charged. And as expected, just like they did in the case out in California with Scott Peterson, the prosecutors granted immunity. So what does that mean? It means Mr. David will have no criminal liability whatsoever, at least by the prosecution. The court could always hold him in contempt, but pretty unlikely. So the prosecutors offered Mr. David immunity, and the Department of Justice signed off on that plan late last night. Now, let's take a quick look at the question. It is pretty straightforward, and it is question number 48. Have you or a friend or family member ever been the victim of sexual harassment, sexual abuse, or sexual assault? This includes actual or attempted sexual assault or other unwanted sexual advance, including by a stranger, acquaintance, supervisor, teacher, or family member. Then there were three options to list. Yes, for the juror themselves being the victim, or yes, I know a family or friend, or no. So we had two opportunities in which to do that. And he, I guess, hastily in the jury, the room that is distracting, hit no. Now, do I think that Mr. David should go to jail? No, pretty unlikely the court would do that. Maybe some costs imposed if a new trial is granted. We'll see what the judge does. Clearly, the judge is going to have to look at this and say, do I judge his credibility as one of being, he made an honest mistake, no harm, no foul, or was it a deliberate attempt to basically get on the jury by saying that you're not a victim? Because I assure you, ladies and gentlemen, there's a better 90% chance, better than a 90% chance that any defense attorney would keep a victim of sexual abuse off the panel of jurors. It's just the way it is. Just like if it was a burglary case and your house got burglarized, you're probably not a good juror for that particular case. And then when you start bringing in your own personal life experiences to explain to the jury why they should be believed, well, now you're bringing in something that was not admitted into evidence nor subject to cross-examination. So I don't know what the judge will do. I think this judge probably wants to move this case along. What's the best way of doing that is simply to not give Ghislaine Maxwell any relief and then let the appellate courts sort it out. Or the judge could be bold and say, you know what? We don't like Ghislaine Maxwell. Been convicted now of doing terrible things, and she probably will be convicted of doing terrible things again. But if there is a doubt in that process, we need to do it and make sure that she receives a fair trial. That would be my advice if I were a judge. But guess what? I'm not a judge. And the way some of my motions have been getting denied in court lately, clearly I don't think like a judge. So we'll have to wait and see what happens. All right, next on the docket, Alex Murdoch. Well, his tentacles run very deep. And his team of attorneys have filed yet another lawsuit to stop the public release of their clients' phone calls from jail. Now, the calls have been given a closer look at Murdoch's life behind bars and is also, well, conveniently or inconveniently directly contradicting many claims made in court by his attorneys. It's only been a week since the lawsuit was filed, and already three federal judges have been assigned to hear the case and then reassigned away from the case. So now a fourth judge has been chosen, U.S. District Court Judge Michelle Childs, who was recently in the running for a potential nomination to the United States Supreme Court, will apparently preside over the case. One possible reason for shuffling might be the judges must remain impartial, obviously, and any appearance to the contrary, such as previous relationships and or other connections to the parties in the case, is a huge problem. But it turns out Miss Michelle Childs might also have a conflict of interest. Well, you see, Murdoch enlisted the public relations company NPS Strategy to try to put a shine on his name after his wife Maggie and son Paul were murdered this past summer. Well, NPS Strategy is also the firm that helped Judge Childs in her bid to become the next Supreme Court nominee. And NPS Strategy is owned by the powerful law firm Nexen Pruett, which used to employ Ms. Childs. Then there is the tight South Carolina Democrat political circle, of which NP Strategy, Murdoch Childs, and her platoon are all members. And finally, Ms. Childs' campaign for Supreme Court nomination was funded, at least in large part, by the South Carolina Association of Justice, whose president, at one point in 2016, was, well, Alex Murdoch. We'll see if the judge remains. You just never know. Looked into this issue quite a bit lately, and the general rule is if there's an appearance of impropriety, the judge should get off the case. But we also know that federal judges shouldn't hear any cases that they personally, a family member, and their close family members have a financial interest in. And there was a report recently in the Wall Street Journal regarding all the judges that remained on cases when there was a conflict of interest. So I guess the conflicts are only good if somebody calls you out on it. All right, just when you think you've heard it all, well, you read something like this. Three women were arrested and charged after a horrific case of alleged child abuse, because we give everybody the presumption of innocence, and this was in Camden County, New Jersey. Now, police say that the 13-year-old girl was forced to wear a shock collar meant for a dog around her neck. The neighbor, Karen Villick, said it was on the afternoon of Tuesday, March 1st, when she heard her doorbell ring repeatedly. She opened the door and she hands me this dog collar. And I go, "Is your dog loose?" And the young lady said, "No, they shocked me. They shocked me." And she showed me her neck and I saw two marks from the dog collar, said Miss Villick, adding that the collar was vibrating in her hand. Villick said she then brought the girl inside her home. She attempted to comfort the 13-year-old while her husband called 911. "I was horrified," said Villick. "My husband and I haven't been able to sleep for days on end. You know, what can we do for this poor little girl?" Police say the girl was taken to the Jefferson Hospital in Stratford for treatment, and the Division of Child Protective Permanency removed her from the home. The next day, authorities arrested Kelly, Rebecca, and Rachel Menning and charged them with aggravated assault and child abuse and neglect. It is alleged that the three forced the girl to wear the shock collar and deprive her of necessary amounts of food and clothing. Now, while the three women denied the abuse when interviewed by the detectives, police say another resident inside the home told them that the dog collar was forced on the girl as punishment when she was misbehaving. Felix says she suspected the home was an unpleasant environment, but never imagined this. "You can hear in the winter through the windows, always yelling and fighting," according to Miss Villick. The three suspects are still locked up in the Camden County Correctional Facility. We'll keep you updated on that one. Now, of course, Miss Villick, I mean, if she was concerned that there's something going on in there, we've raised this issue as it relates to the whole Michigan shooter thing, and yeah, she's not a family member, but she was suspicious. Should she have been charged? Ooh, you see the slippery little slope that starts to develop, don't you? That's right. That's why our legal system charges the individual. Another teacher story. This time involves a little bit of biting, and not the good kind, okay? A Florida special education teacher by the name of Rhonda Rice, she's 63, is facing charges over allegations that she bit two students over a jar of pickles. That's right, pickles. This is where it gets a little weird. Now, Rice told the administrators in the Polk County Public School District that she was just playing with the students when she bit them. Now, Rice was suspended for 3 days after the incident, which occurred at the Bartow Middle School. She was relocated to Sleepy Hill Middle School, where she is currently an active teacher. Now, the aunt of one of the students, a woman by the name of Kathy Toro, said that her nephew and another male student were working at the school store when Rice attempted to take a jar of pickles. Now, it's unclear if Rice was trying to steal the pickles, but when the two students tried to get the jar back, Rice allegedly bit both of them on the forearm. It's unclear if the students suffered injuries because of the incident, but both students reported the incident to faculty. Now, Kathy Toro has also filed charges against Rice. Since then, Rice has admitted to licking the students, according to the police, but she hasn't confessed to biting them. Apparently, this isn't the first time that Rice has had a couple of disciplinary actions. She was involved in four incidents during her 22-year-long teaching career. In September of 2001, she was given a verbal and written reprimand due to her lack of preparedness for class at the Boone Middle School. In July of 2008, Sleepy High Middle School suspended Rice for a day after she excessively used a district-issued computer for personal business instead of teaching or preparing for class. In March of 2015, the same school issued a verbal warning with a written confirmation to the teacher for repeated failure to complete a scheduled IEP in a timely manner. That's an individual educational plan. Rice is now facing two misdemeanor battery charges and is set to be arraigned on March 31st. Going back to the general rule, not just for teachers, but for everybody, keep your hands and your mouth to yourself. Didn't your mother ever teach you, like when you go into a store, we look with our eyes, not our hands, we don't touch, you break it, you buy it, just keep your hands to yourself. Okay, this, just when you thought it was safe to maybe get back to normal, you hear about this. A married couple were apparently riding their bicycles home after a bar outing in Daytona Beach, Florida over the weekend, and were viciously attacked and had their throats cut. Let's just put it that way, cut. A passerby found Terry Altman, 48, and Brenda Altman, 55, lying motionless in a patch of grass near the intersection of North Wild Olive Avenue and Riverview Boulevard just before 2 a.m. on Sunday. Apparently, the couple stated that we've found two people possibly deceased. There's blood everywhere, according to the 911 call. Initially, Daytona Beach police responded to the call and initially thought it was a hit and run, but then they saw multiple stab wounds and lacerations upon the bodies. Now, the couple were riding their pedal bikes home that night from the Daytona Beach Annual Bike Week Festival. For those of you who don't know, it's a big motorcycle festival, and it's called Daytona Bike Week. Well, their pedal bikes were found next to their bodies, and this is probably one of the most vicious and gruesome incidents that the police chief says that he has witnessed in his 20 years at the station. We can't rule out that this may be totally random, but if it is totally random, the person responsible has to be deranged. The suspect, who remains at large, was described as a possible black man with a possibly wearing light-colored pants and a backpack. Residents of the neighborhood describe the area as a typically quiet historic neighborhood, but say they are now in fear for their safety. Now, according to neighbors, the Altmans had just moved to Daytona Beach about 6 months ago to enjoy the beach life, the quiet life. Well, they are survived by Brenda's grown daughter, who described her mother as her best friend and her stepfather, Terry, as a wonderful man. He will spare no expense to leave no stone unturned in order to solve the case, the chief of police said in a statement. He stated, quote, I assure you that the detectives are doing all they can to bring justice to the loved ones of the victims. Be safe out there, ladies and gentlemen. All right, this is not a good way to start a job. A man in Texas was scheduled to show up to a jail Monday to work as a correctional officer, but instead was arrested Saturday for online solicitation of a minor with intent for sexual contact. Authorities claim Alucard Harris, A-L-U-C-A-R-D, Harris, common spelling, communicated with the minor through Snapchat in his attempt to engage in illicit sexual activity. Now, Harris, who's 20, was set to start work as a temporary jailer at the Bexar County Sheriff's Office on Monday. He certainly went there, but not the way originally planned, and not surprising because of the arrest. Well, he's no longer employed or going to be employed by the jail, and he remains locked up on a $100,000 bond. I guess this will see if he's going to have a career in the future. Somehow, I don't think he's going to. And little did we know, Alucard spelled backwards spells Dracula. Who knew? Next on the docket, another politician in trouble, making headlines, but not for the right reasons. The former mayor of Beaverton, Oregon, was arraigned last Friday for possession of child pornography and has pled not guilty. Now, Dennis Denny Doyle served three terms as mayor between November of 2014 and December of the next year, allegedly possessed digital material containing child pornography, according to police reports. Now, Doyle, he's 73 years old and was charged with the one count of possession of the alleged pornography. The images that he allegedly had in his possession may have included, allegedly, some images of some children under the age of 12. Allegedly. Now, Doyle was the city's mayor from 2009 till 2020 after losing his re-election bid, and he had previously served with the city council for over a decade. Now, according to the report, Mr. Doyle was paid employee of the Westside Metro Soccer Club when he took office. He helped found the nonprofit youth club, which is now the Westside Timbers Soccer Club. In 1993, the current mayor, Lacey Beattie, addressed the situation in a statement writing, "Like you, I am shocked by the news today. We elect leaders with the expectation that they will serve, protect, and advocate for our children and families and communities. The charges against the former Mayor Doyle are deeply concerning." Now, what have we said before, ladies and gentlemen? Usually people that allegedly wind up with these images on their computer usually like to be around children. And what was this guy doing for the last decades? Working around kids. Huh. Coincidence? I don't know. We'll give him the presumption of innocence. Make up your own mind. Leave me a comment below. And finally, our dumb criminal of the day. A woman left her infant daughter in an unlocked car while she went and gambled in a Florida arcade for nearly 2 hours. Police were called to the parking lot outside the Pirates Arcade after a report of a child being alone inside a Nissan Sentra. After about 10 minutes, the child's mother, Bianca Lockhart, emerged from the casino and claimed her friend was watching her daughter while she gambled. Lockett changed her story once she realized police had surveillance video of her. Lockett reportedly admitted that she left her child in the car with the windows rolled up and the AC turned on, thinking that she would only be inside for a few minutes. Well, I guess that makes it okay, doesn't it? Now, Miss Lockett was arrested on a pair of felony charges and being held in the Indian River County Jail in lieu of a $50,000 bond. The report does not say who is now caring for the child, but the judge has ordered that Lockett have no contact with the infant. Okay, dumb. Miss Lockett, really? You're going to leave your kid in the car, but it was only for a few minutes and the air conditioning was on while you went inside and gambled. Okay, it doesn't take that long for a child that could die in those conditions. You're just dumb. Miss Lockett, you're dumb. You are selfish, and it's all about you. And clearly, you do not have what it takes to be a responsible adult. And more than likely, you're not going to be able to be around your child the way things are going for you. So, Miss Lockett, you are dumb criminal of the day. Congratulations, you've earned it. All right. Thanks for watching. We'll see you tonight at 6 p.m. Mountain Time for our live show tonight, After Dark. Please join us.